if you can't afford a relationship coach, you can ask AI. You can say to AI, suppose you were a relationship coach and I am your client and I am bringing in this problem where I need to ask my partner if we can leave on Thursday instead of Friday. What do you think is the best approach considering he has multiple meetings or whatever? And AI can bring, or I can say, I would like to say this to my partner. Do you think this is considerate enough considering
and which tone I should could say it in? Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to the Brain and Brand Show. I'm your host, Timothy Maurice. My mission is to bring you the best insights about the brain to help you be more competitive and ultimately to help you accelerate your goals and dreams. We bring you the world's best research and the boldest and brightest thinkers to ensure you have access to cutting-edge knowledge. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to an extraordinary woman, Zoe Mabi. She's a global women in tech thought leader, over 5 years at Meta, and just an extraordinarily sweet, brilliant person. How are you, Zoe? Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Tim. I'm doing great.
Good.
How are you?
Good, good. Awesome. So I'm really looking forward to this chat for a lot of reasons, because I'm looking forward to learning. Mm-hmm. I feel like this whole AI thing is just so broad, and I feel fortunate you made time to come in, so thank you.
Absolutely.
But we have to go inside of your mind. We have a fun feature for our audience to get to know you, and we call it Inside Your Mind. Seven fun either-or type of questions. Can I get access to your brain quickly?
Okay, access permitted. Let's go.
Thank you. Seven questions. Number one, swimming or running?
Oof, running.
Number two, tennis or paddle?
Ooh, tennis, only because it's less injuries.
I love that. Paris or Rome?
Oof, difficult. Rome. Yeah, definitely Rome.
Okay. The questions get increasingly more difficult.
Okay.
Number four, cappuccino or latte?
Latte, because matchas come in latte.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Number five, getting closer and closer to home for you. TikTok or Instagram?
Instagram, obviously. Meta family.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Number six, a really, really good series or a good movie?
Good movie. Definitely.
What's your favorite movie of all time?
That's a difficult one. I think Cloud Atlas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we'll have to do another podcast on why.
Got it.
Cool. But definitely Got Cloud it. Atlas.
So this one I've never done before. Mm-hmm. If you were stuck on an island alone and you could be visited for a day by one of these two, which one would it be?
Okay.
A robot or an animal?
An animal, because essentially we are part of the animal species. So in order to get that connectivity, I would need to maybe be with an animal. Although robots are obviously trying to...
solve the
synthesize
same.
Our being, but you can't compare to our species.
It's funny. Did you see that campaign with, I don't know if it was Tesla and Kim Kardashian with the dog that was a robot?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for allowing us to go inside your mind. So this chat is interesting for me because I was thinking, you know, I think I know you okay. I mean, I don't know you that well, but I know you a little bit. Mm. I followed your career quite closely. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, when did you fall in love with tech?
I suppose I fell in love with tech when I actually got into the industry and started working for Meta. And this kind of widened the understanding of just how many solutions we can bring to businesses, especially businesses who are starting in the market and businesses who want to grow. The types of insights and data that technology can bring to businesses far outweighs traditional advertising. You can reinvent your strategy 5 days after you've started your marketing campaign just because you have the data points and the insights of the performance of your campaign. So that kind of impact that tech can bring to the journey of a business, and really business is my ultimate favorite. So whatever tech can do for businesses is the reason why I love it and the reason why I fall in love with it. There are other stories where, you know, network and connectivity in small villages like in countries like Ghana, where you have you've got merchants coming from big cities into small villages, buying crops or buying produce, going back to the big cities, and you know, charging five times more than what they bought it for. But as soon as the women in these villages are connected to the internet, they get an understanding of how much the merchants are actually charging in the cities. And so they can actually increase the price of their produce. And by increasing the price of their produce, they can then earn more, buy more resources, connect more of their people to the internet. And that's what growth is about. So tech enables growth.
Yeah.
And that's seen in so many aspects of the world. And that's why it's so beautiful. And that's why I've fallen in love with it.
So for my work with the U.S. Department of Commerce, I get a chance to interview people who are doing government contracts to solve problems.
Right.
And one of the guys I interviewed last week for that work was sharing how tech helped advance the recovery for the California wildfires.
Wow.
And I was like, that's it, right? Like, we think of tech, we think of like hard tech, like, you know, and your point is so powerful. Like, linking what you do and your love for tech for business owners in a rural area. I mean, that is incredible. I mean, you've been able to travel this continent quite a bit, haven't you? Do you have any favorite places where on the continent that you...
I think the most interesting place on the continent is definitely Nigeria, in the sense that, you know, it has so many infrastructural challenges, but the spirit of the people and the economy, the entrepreneurship that is emerging out of that market is so interesting. Solving for that over the next couple of years is going to be really important, I think, for our continent because of the population.
Yeah.
And also just because of how much commerce and currency that country can drive. South Africa is also incredibly important. It remains to be the cornerstone of, or one of the cornerstones, I won't say the, of the continent. And, you know, it's so symbolic and significant in connecting us to the rest of the world. And I'd love for us to make more progress as a country. So I'd say the most interesting is definitely, you know, Nigeria. I mean, there's so many beautiful places. Interesting places. Kenya obviously has the best tech coming out of the continent right now. And then South Africa, which will always remain this foundational piece and country for the continent, I believe.
The next part of my chat, you've already kind of solved it, but I do want to touch on it a little bit, that you could be doing anything. You're bright, you're brilliant. You could be doing anything. You know, you've done some marketing in your background.
Right.
But I think you've kind of answered it. But maybe you want to elaborate that. It's your love for business and helping make an impact. But are there other reasons why you've stayed in tech?
I've stayed in tech because, especially when it comes to Meta, is that Meta is building out its family of apps to become more of an enterprise solution rather than just social media platforms. And the enterprise solution aspect of tech, as I mentioned before, is what really intrigues and interests me, because if you can have a full family of solutions that can help your business from A to B, you know, cloud data storage, chatbots, social media platforms, you know, the full life cycle of a business or ecosystem of a business can be supported by tech enterprise solutions. That's when you start to see the magic. I'm not saying that I'm going to go into that field when I start working on, you know, for myself, but I think that is where the sweet spot is when it comes to tech and solutions, is when it becomes enterprise solutions and not just, you know, sitting as its own social media app or platform.
Meta is, you know, people are starting to become more familiar with Meta, but for the people who are not sure, what all does Meta encompass?
Sure. So Meta is a family of apps that include Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, WhatsApp. We've expanded it now to hardware like Ray-Ban smart glasses. We also
can you give me some of those glasses, please? I mean, those like, I was doing a book launch and there was a guy on the front row with some of those glasses. I used to think they were only shades, but I didn't know you could get the clear lenses as well.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And people think that it's actually the glasses that are recording or whatever, but there's actually two little cameras on each side, and that's what takes in the information.
I'm actually serious, but my birthday is coming up and, you know, I drive a scooter sometimes.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, like, you know, sometimes I take a scooter around the coast. And actually, I want to go to a Vespa trip in Italy. And those glasses would be perfect.
It's going to be so useful for you. Exactly.
Thank you so much.
And it's multimodal now. So what that means is that while you're on your Vespa, you know, you can look at some piece of architecture in Rome and ask Meta, hey, what am
you
I looking
have
at?
Got
what
to
is
be
this?
Kidding.
Yeah, and then it will tell you.
You're playing, right?
No, this is exactly what's happening now. It'll tell you what it is. You can look at a bunch of ingredients on the table, some fruits and some vegetables, and you can ask the glasses, you know, what recipe can you give me based on what you see? And they can pop out a recipe, pass the recipe, whatever that may be. So the AI aspect of the smart glasses is getting really interesting in how much of a support function it's going to play in our lives. And I think that should be a theme that you and I keep as we continue in the conversation, is that it's a support function.
Yeah.
And it'll never take over the real role and job of a human being. It is a support for us. And how we use the support is going to be the thing that unlocks our brain and, like you said, our new brain.
You continue to, you've got, I think, multiple degrees. You continue to study. Are you happy you're studying in this chapter of history? And the reason I'm asking is because I'm glad I went back to school in 2016, 2017, and I'm glad I didn't do my neuroscience studies 10 years prior, because there was so much breakthrough in technology that I learned so much more. And I, even now, I feel a little bit behind.
Right.
But are you happy that you went back to school now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I've just finished all the modules in my master's at Warwick Business School, so that's been a great accomplishment. But the best part about doing it now is that I have the context and the experience, having worked in Meta, to really cement the learnings of each module. So the context that I can write on from a case study point of view, and how I can contextualize all of the theories and all of the academic work, makes it so much more useful. Because as you, as the lecturers are taking you through the content, you're like, oh, I know about this. Like, I was sitting in a meeting and this happened. Or, oh, yes, we applied the strategy. So it's a far more valuable experience when you've had the experience, the work experience, to then go into your master's and reinforce that with all of the academic theory. And, you know, my dissertation was around AI, and it was like I had gone from one research question to the next, to the next, to the next, because AI is such a broad topic. I was telling my supervisor, can we have meetings at 3 p.m. because I get such a headache. My brain is just so sore from all of the information that there is around AI that it is, I think, a far more better time to explore the topic now than it would have been. It kind of stagnated maybe a couple of years back, but over the last 3 years, which we'll talk about, AI has, you know, taken a whole new phase of its contribution to society. Yeah.
Let's talk intelligence first before we get to artificial intelligence. I mean, in any friendship, any relationship, any game, we use pattern recognition with our brain power. You know, if we're playing paddle or tennis, or you're trying to figure out how to get somewhere on time, or you're trying to figure out why your friend is being shady, or you're trying to figure out how to position yourself online. You know, we're using pattern recognition. We're using certain levels of, you know, knowledge, and we retrieve an information from our brain.
We're just
constantly mapping and so forth. And I think sometimes people underestimate intelligence. One time I had a neurologist on my show, and she's like, do you realize that an idea often starts as a tingle in your spine?
That's powerful.
And it raises up through your body and eventually gets through the unconscious, through the filters, and eventually through the prefrontal region, and then words come out.
Wow.
And we completely underestimate that. And I think why I got excited about this interview is that from the moment you put a prompt into a particular platform like ChatGPT, whatever it is, PT, and then the output, it's insane, right? Before we talked about AI, what is one of the one of your favorite ways that you use your intelligence in the world?
Ooh, I was not prepared for this question. but I love what you're saying, because our brains, and you've included our bodies, are the original supercomputers.
Yes.
So nothing can compare to the power of what's been created in mankind. And I think my favorite type of intelligence is perhaps social skills and emotional intelligence. I think the ability to read people creates some of the best opportunities to influence or empower people. If you can walk into a room and understand who's feeling slightly insecure or who's feeling slightly arrogant, and you can actually downplay or upplay your, and you can regulate your emotions and your intelligence around that information, you can really work a room, you can work a crowd, you can create an opportunity for yourself, you can create an opportunity with the people that you've walked into the room with. There is so much more potential in a space than just the space that you see with your eyes. And intelligence helps you understand that. And that, I think, is one of the most exciting parts. I mean, there's academic intelligence, of course. You read a book, you regurgitate what you read. But I think what's exciting is human interaction and how you can use intelligence to better that experience for both human beings, or to better the experience for yourself, for some selfish people who are very ambitious. But there are so many more avenues that can come out of using emotional intelligence and social skills that can really get you far. I was actually listening to a podcast with Robert Greene, who wrote 48 Laws of Power, and that's all about EQ, social skills, intelligence, and how to use it as levers and not just as a blanket approach to life, you know. So that, I think, is interesting.
Let's talk about a portfolio of all the various intelligences as we go into AI. So one of the original ones is IQ,
right?
Then EQ came along, then SQ, spiritual intelligence, then cultural intelligence. And then I brought along in my fourth book, PBQ, personal brand intelligence.
Love that.
I think we should introduce AIQ, artificial intelligence quotient. AIQ.
That's interesting, because that speaks to, I think, what we're going to be talking about today as well.
Right?
Which is basically the proficiency in the skill of AI. Yeah.
Did we just come up with something?
I think we did. Should we patent that right now?
I think we should. Right? Okay.
But so, I want money from this always.
So let's talk about what that is. Break it down. Like, what is that proficiency? Let's talk a little bit about the, you know, the various platforms where you can use the proficiency. Take us on a little bit of a journey.
Okay. I think let's start with artificial intelligence.
Okay.
So we know that it's not a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's been around for decades, serving us in the background by analyzing data and predicting patterns for us. But over the last 3 years, there's been a little bit of a shift where all of a sudden the everyday man is using AI. And you don't need sophisticated data sets to engage with AI. So why is that? That's because there's a new type of artificial intelligence that has come on the market, which is called generative AI.
Generative
AI. So what is generative AI? Generative AI is a type of artificial intelligence that is trained on large amounts of data and generates new content based on what it learns. So it can generate both text and image. And there are different tools, right? There's ChatGPT, which you spoke about. There's Bard. There's Gemini. There's Meta AI. By the way, do you know what GPT stands for? Generative Pre-trained Transformer.
Wow.
Which makes complete sense, right? If it's trained on data sets that encompasses the pre-trained, Transformer is that it transforms that data into new content, and generative is because it generates. So it actually makes complete sense that it's GPT.
And Grok is one of these as well, right?
I believe so, yes. But but there are thousands of different ones. And they are open AI models that companies can then use and model for their own purposes.
Okay.
So
got it.
There could be open ones, close, you know, so there's just thousands on the market.
Can I just say this quickly? Grok has completely changed the game for me, because to be able to tag Grok and be like, why is this thing trending? Because, like, we need this, guys. If I go to a trend, because people hashtag and they use trends to make their thing trend,
right.
You never know why something is trending.
Right.
It is so frustrating. I'm like, why is Zoe trending? Meanwhile, it's some random DJ has posted it and tagged your name, and I can't figure it out. So Grok now has helped
helps
us.
You. Okay.
Yeah.
So it helps disseminate the information.
I can be like, why is Zoe's photo all over the place? And then it will tell me. It's just the most beautiful thing. But that's what I'm loving about this generative AI moment.
Right.
I'm like, it really is helping me from a research. Can I tell you something funny that just happened to me recently? So I did some training. I did like these full day training. And one of the things about training, you need cool exercises, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're sitting in a class the whole day, having interesting exercises to do, I put in ChatGPT. Right. Why do I want to say TP? And it gave me some really cool ways to enhance what I was already doing.
Right. Yeah.
I was shocked.
Right.
I was literally, because first of all, I thought there was no one else doing this.
And that's the thing, right? And like we said, the human brain is the original supercomputer. So you'll find that a lot of things do become instinctive, but you still need to build the proficiency. And we'll talk about that because, of course, the human brain is incredibly impressive. Because of social media, our eyes have been trained to receive data faster in the space of your own lifetime because you're scrolling through images faster. Mm. So the human eye is evolving as you're living, you know, that's how fast and impressive it is. So yes, it's not going to be new news that you instinctively become better at this function, but we would still need to build those proficiencies. But I just wanted to kind of summarize the difference then between the AI that we've known for years and this new generative AI.
Cool.
To summarize, the difference between classical AI is that it's analytical and it's predictive. So in the analytical and predictive category, we've got our classical AI. And then generative AI takes data sets to generate new content. That is, at its basic level, the difference between these two artificial intelligences.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about, like in my case, on a practical daily basis, as a writer, researcher, I mean, that generative AI is more of a tool that I need to understand.
For sure.
Right. How are you using generative AI on a daily basis in your life?
Oh my gosh. I probably use it more than anyone in my community. Instead of going to Google, I pretty much go to Meta AI and I ask, you know, what's the difference between oil and water? That's a bad example. But on my WhatsApp, I'm always heading off to Meta AI to just quickly get quick questions answered. In my LinkedIn for my professional experience, for example, I'd write a post summarizing all of my activities for each half or each quarter, you know, the events that I've done, the achievements that I've done. I'll write it out and then I'll pop it into AI and say, write this in a way that's good for publications. That's all I say. And then I copy and paste and they'll come up with something really interesting, which I augment, of course, to make it sound and feel like me. But I use it, yeah, we use it in all those forms. We use it to rewrite emails when we're sending out communication to our executive stakeholders. We use it to write updates on what we've done as a business. It's always the second draft of whatever we've written, essentially. So you'll find that how one should be using AI is it could essentially be your first draft and then you augment it, or you create your first draft and it will augment it. And then you'll have your third and final draft, which sounds feels more like you.
Got it.
But speaking of the commercial use, I think it's a good time to talk about the benefits of artificial intelligence, or Gen AI specifically. And I think I alluded to it earlier when I said you don't need sophisticated data sets to use Gen AI. That's probably the number one most powerful thing about it, is that it's so accessible. So previously with classical AI, it was like, you know, data sets somewhere in the back of a huge data center. Like, you would never have access to it, or companies would have to pay large amounts of money to get access to it and build upon that. This is a tool, as long as you have internet, you have access to
it. Got it.
So that's incredibly important, I think, for society. And then how it's used is right now mostly in business and education, and it's slowly trickling down to everyday life. Entrepreneurs, marketers, and legal firms have all recorded increased productivity because of Gen AI. Law firms use Gen AI to write the first draft of their legal document.
Apparently it's impacting their fees, though, because it's not taking as much time.
Right. So we need to talk about how we then still make our fees what our fees are, because we have those proficiencies as well in our skill set, right? And so the productivity, like you said, has changed. I wouldn't say it's gone down, but it's changed. In 2023, Unilever saw a 90% reduction in time spent by agents responding to customers because of AI-generated response recommendations. So what that means is if a customer, you know, were to send in a complaint, AI can see the complaint or query. AI will recommend a response. So instead of an agent drafting that response, AI is recommending it. This means that agents can go ahead and spend more time chasing leads rather than working on queries or customer queries. So, of course, this means that things that took, you know, weeks and months can now take days or not even need our attention as much at all. So this changes how teams work. Teams now have time to do more impactful work. Teams have time to focus on leads, which obviously helps with efficiencies.
And innovation and growth and accelerating everything, right?
And then ultimately revenue,
which,
of course, we're in an economy where revenue is important. Yeah. I don't want to say that we're all capitalists here, but revenue is important. So essentially the bottom line is being, especially in business, is being positively impacted by Gen AI. Deliverables are being delivered much, much faster. So that's, I think, the benefit of it. You spoke to the limitation of how do we charge these fees. So this is interesting because I've also heard of a couple of stories where it's changed the dynamic between an entrepreneur and a contractor, like a copywriter, right? Mm. Entrepreneur goes to a copywriter and says, look, I need to contract you so that you can write some copy for my website apps asset. Copywriter's like, sure, I'm going to go use some AI. And the entrepreneur gets the copy back and can see that this has been artificially created. So the entrepreneur goes, well, let me try my own prompt. He puts in a prompt himself, finds out that his output is actually better than the copywriter he contracted. So what happens now? Does he pay the contractor? Do they go back and forth between whose copy works? So this has become a limitation in business, is copywriters or contractors who are using AI need to be aware that it's so accessible to everyone else.
Yes.
So if it's so accessible to everyone else, how do you change your service? Another concern is intellectual property. So as I mentioned before, artificial intelligence is only as good as its data set that it's learning from, right? Mm. And it generates all of this new content from data sets. It's not doing it from the ether. So what if any of those data sets are actually protected by copyright laws or intellectual property laws? And a firm goes ahead and uses that. The risk that the firm faces in using copyrighted or protected content could be quite damaging for the firm. And then inversely, if the firm is creating new content from the tool and other people have access to the tool, how much of their intellectual property is then being seen or shared with other users? So those are also other risks and concerns that the academic world has been exploring in terms of limitations around AI. But the most important, I think, that a lot of people have been discussing is bias.
Yeah.
In Gen AI, and this has been a super hot topic. Bloomberg did a very interesting test recently. They used Stable Diffusion, which is a text-to-image tool, and they pretty much asked Stable Diffusion to generate a couple of thousand images of high-paying jobs in the U.S., low-paying jobs in the U.S. So of the high-paying jobs, of course, you've got your lawyers, your architects, your CEOs. From a skin color point of view, what color skin do you think represented the high-paying jobs?
White,
right, in this tool. And then the low-paying jobs, like your janitors, your social workers, your fast food workers, were all represented as darker skin tone people.
In the U.S., probably Hispanic and
exactly. Black, yeah. And that's why we can't even say dark black people. We say darker skinned, right? Yeah. So there's that. And then also there is the high-paying role of an engineer. Because we're now, there's the bias of color, there's also bias of gender. So high-paying role of an engineer. Of the 300 images that were produced, only two were not men.
Yeah.
So the one was a woman and the one was ambiguous. But of the 300 or so images that were created,
Do you feel as though each iteration of the new generative AI will solve for this somehow? Do you feel like we need to be proactively creating AI to solve for it ahead of the reality? So, for example, if you look at actuarial scientists, you know, in different parts of the world, you find that the majority are men. But with the growth and uptake, should we be using AI to drive the uptake or let it happen more organically?
Interesting question. I think the industry is taking responsibility. So it is happening already. where the creators of these AI models are taking accountability for the inherent biases that they have, and they're already working to solve it, and they're already taking up data from other countries.
Good.
So it's already happening. I mean, there was a petition maybe last year that a whole lot of tech leaders signed, including Elon Musk, where it said, let's pause on the advances of AI while we try and mitigate these risks. And then Elon went ahead and did some other stuff anyway, so it didn't matter. But there are large communities that are holding these CEOs and creators of AI models accountable. And as they're being developed, they're improving it, of course, and the outputs are getting better and better. Because it's a learning model, you know, the solves are always going to be easier. You just need to input data that creates better representation and more general data sets. The US has the largest catalog or depository of data. So, of course, a lot of the information is going to come from there. We need to make sure, as the community in tech and intelligence, that they get access to other sets of data so that the outputs are more representative of communities and societies. The risk here is perpetuating stereotypes, and this is what, you know, we need to avoid, because the risk is then, you know, you're going to be learning, or you're going to be teaching children from all of the AI outputs that will be presented to them in a couple of years. You're going to be teaching them that janitors are indeed darker skinned and lawyers are indeed lighter skinned, and this is what we need to avoid.
And it's scary, man. Like, if you think about even certain names, right?
Mm.
Like. I was having a chat to a friend of mine recently about what we call the substrate of society. For so many years, movies, academia have buried certain language, intelligence, images, symbols so deep that we operate without in blind spots on so much of this conversation around inclusion and so forth. And then the question, how do we use technology responsibly to kind of deal with the substrate?
Mm.
And because our biases, we're going to have biases, right? Mm. Society is moving so fast that things are happening at such speed that it's a very chicken or egg dynamic. And I think the work you guys are doing is exciting for all of those reasons. Like, we have the ability to create earthquake type change with this. And I've started to kind of open up and not be so afraid of this stuff.
Mm-mm.
And these type of conversations are important to me as I think about moving forward, because instead of resisting it, you know, when Google first came out, so I'm older, when Google first came out, people were scared. They're like, oh my God, you can attack someone with this thing. And I hope people take away from this conversation to not be so afraid.
Mm.
Let's work together. Mm. Let's challenge these tech leaders and so forth. And I'm happy that we have people like you on the front line that are leading. And let's talk a little bit about women in tech quickly. Mm-hmm. Why is that important that women's voices like yours are on the front line?
Ooh, another important and deep question. I think diversity and representation generally, whether it's culture or gender or race, is important. And so when I speak about women, I'm actually representing the idea of diversity. Diversity is important because it brings completely different experiences, different cultures, different ideas to a table and to a discussion. And that difference and diversity can allow for solutions and ideas that no one person could ever create.
Sure.
And can bring perspectives that no one person could ever have thought about. And it's a great question that you're asking, because it's the same thing with Gen AI, is that Gen AI does not have an understanding of culture yet.
Mm.
Gen AI is not going to understand when it produces season 4 of White Lotus, that's an all-white cast because already 95% of the cast is white. Season 4 is an all-white cast, that South Africans are not going to be watching the show because we can't relate. They don't understand, the tools, the models don't understand that yet. And so it's our job from a diversity perspective to ensure that we're bringing the voices and the perspectives of women and women's experiences. And also, might I add, the qualities and traits that women have. Women are far more compassionate. And this is literally, it's biological. It's not, we're not calling out men here, but because of the hormones that we have, we have more compassion and we can bring compassion to the workplace in a way that men can't. It can't be pulled out of workplace and society and business. With these things together, that's what makes, I think, a really great business run. And it's the same way a great household runs. If you've got both a mother and a father, you're going to produce far more better children out there than you would if it was just a single parent. And I think businesses run and can be influenced the same way.
Should a woman be, or a partner, if you, you know, bisexual, whatever your sexual orientation is, if you find out your partner has been chatting with you using the AI and WhatsApp and their responses have been generated, should the partner, if you found that out, should the partner be upset or should the partner be flattered? Like, you really want to get this right?
Yes, I would say the latter because I'm guilty of that myself.
Really?
Right. And I'll tell you why. I think.
Wait. Have you ever used, if I message you and be like, hey, what's up? Have you ever responded with some sort of AI?
Oh my gosh.
I'm calling you out.
I'm being called out here. I'm not even going to give a time frame to this. Whoever's listening is not going to know whether it's them. But this is great because it brings me to the topic of augmentation. And this leads into like prompting. Is that the way in which you can use AI can really help you save costs in relationships. So if you can't afford a relationship coach, you can ask AI. You can say to AI, suppose you were a relationship coach and I am your client and I am bringing in this problem where I need to ask my partner if we can leave on Thursday instead of Friday. What do you think is the best approach considering he has multiple meetings or whatever? And AI can bring, or I can say, I would like to say this to my partner. Do you think this is considerate enough considering
which tone I could say it in?
Is my tone understanding enough?
Wow.
AI will come back and say, great first draft, love the tone. However, I would change this to this because it will produce this and he won't take offense to that. And here I am workshopping my conversation with my boyfriend to AI. But this is only because I want to make sure that I'm sensitive to what's happening in his life. And I'm giving AI the full context of his life to say he's got X amount of meetings, his mom needs him, da 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 da. These are all the items that you need to understand to give me the correct advice.
But wait. Couldn't that potentially build a gap? You'd be like, wait, your chatting identity versus in person has a bit of a gap because
That's a good point. Is that you still need to be able to regulate your emotions as a human being in person?
Yeah. I think we're going to eventually have chips in our head, like Elon.
We're going to
have chips. Chips are going to be like in real time, altering thoughts. I honestly think that's where we headed.
But this is my point: is that using the tool to create final drafts of anything without augmenting it yourself is a dangerous realm to play in.
Oh, okay.
That's what I think. And so then let's just talk about augmentation and what it is. And you're probably doing it already, but it's basically amending the tool's output to make it more accurate, coherent, and relevant for the intended audience. So this requires a skill or an approach when it comes to augmentation. And this is going to develop into an expected proficiency in the long term. And so we can call that the skill of prompting and more specifically prompt engineering. Robin Lee, in fact, who is the co-founder and CEO of a Chinese big tech company called Baidu, predicts that in 10 years, half of the world's jobs will involve prompt engineering. So if it involves prompt engineering, what do we need to do about it? How do we need
to? Yeah, like how can I be a better prompter?
Exactly. So what is prompt engineering? In basic terms, it's the ability to articulate the problem, its context, and the constraints on the desired solution to an AI assistant in such a way that's going to produce accurate and coherent outputs. In simple terms, articulating the problem, I want me and my boyfriend to leave earlier, its context, he's got a lot of work to do, a lot of meetings, etc. The constraints, I understand that X, Y, and Z is happening. And then you're tailoring your prompt more and more so that you get a more correct, accurate, and coherent output. Now, there are a couple of frameworks out there in the academic world around prompt engineering because it is becoming a proficiency. You can go study it at this point. But I'll use one framework, which I call LUMR, but it's actually ULMR, but it's easier to remember as LUMR.
ULMR.
ULMR. So the U stands for understanding the model. You have to understand the tool that you're engaging with, whether it's ChatGPT or the one that you mentioned earlier, or Gemini or Bard. You have to understand that. Then the L is literacy, prompt literacy. Are you articulating the problem in the correct way? Okay, then the M is methodology. Are you structuring your prompt in the correct way that has the context, the problem, the constraints, etc.? And then R is critical reasoning. The output that comes out, are you thinking about it critically? Are you looking at that output? Are you asking yourselves questions about the output? Is this accurate? Because AI can sometimes pop out things that sound very factual and accurate, but in fact, it's taken it from a data set that is completely wrong. So you need to have the proficiency to actually critically analyze the output that's being given to you and say, is this correct? Does this have bias? Could this fall into an intellectual property space? You need to be able to ask yourself those questions. So with that framework, you can then start to build your proficiency in AI.
So take me through. I'm a CEO and I want my employees to start exercising more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so take me through this. Instead of me going, guys, you would be, you'll have a lot less time off. You would call in a lot less if you start exercising a bit more.
Mm.
Right? Take me through the best way for this CEO, for me, to even think about approaching this using generative AI.
Okay. So I'm trying to, I like to, when I use Gen AI, I like to say suppose. So I like to do role modeling.
Okay,
which
cool.
is role modeling helps bring context for the tool. So you can say, suppose you are the CEO of a company.
Yep.
Who's
got 1,000 employees.
Got 1,000. So now you're bringing context.
Yep.
Who's got 1,000 employees, 50% of which are overweight.
Yes.
You start to bring all of that context in.
Yeah.
And by the way, you can break up your prompts. You can have two pieces of information, and then the prompt will say, okay, got it. And then you can keep layering your information. You don't always have to put it in one paragraph, but let's, for the sake of this conversation, put it in one paragraph. So suppose you're the CEO of a big company, 60% of its employees are overweight. We believe that for health, wellness, stress, exercise is really important for our employees. Suggest or propose a statement that I will be emailing to my employees, or that you will email to your employees, with all these considerations in place of how we can encourage them to exercise more.
Okay.
And through that, you'll then get a first draft. Now, it's up to you to use the framework to then augment that first draft.
I see. Get it.
So that it's more fitting for your audience.
Got it.
I would never recommend for you to just take the first output and pop it into anything. Augmentation is part of the relationship between Gen AI and ourselves. And that's why we're not going anywhere.
Mm.
That's why you're not going to lose your job anytime soon, because augmentation is still an important function and part of the system.
We still need you to put it in. Yeah.
Absolutely. Let me give you another example to put it in practical terms. Let's say, for example, you're preparing for a job interview and you want to prepare a set of questions for yourself to practice with. You could prompt the tool by saying, I'm preparing for an interview for a sales role. Please provide possible questions that will be asked. Very vague, I would say, right? But if you were to use the framework that I spoke about with all those sub-skills, we can then start formulating the prompt in this way. Suppose you were a country director for a sales team at Meta. The candidate has already been asked role-related knowledge questions. What leadership and culture questions would you ask the candidate? And through that prompt, because of the role modeling, suppose you are a country director, because of the context at Meta, because of the constraints, already asked role-related knowledge questions, looking for culture and leadership questions, you're going to get a far more accurate output. In fact, you might even get asked those exact questions. I want to bet on it, but someone needs to look for a new role somewhere. You might even be asked those exact questions. That's how good it is if you're able to add the context, the constraints, the role modeling, and structure your prompt in that meaningful way. Yeah?
So just, you never answered my question about if your partner, if you found out your partner was using this to get you to leave early or to, you'd be flattered.
Yeah, I would actually think it's a sign of intelligence, because I believe that as tools and resources become available to us, if you're not using it at this stage of the game, then like you're falling behind. It's like biohacking, you know?
Got it.
If you know that there's oxygen therapy available to you and you're not using it, or if you know that you should be taking these vitamins and you're not taking it, then like, and if you die, then that's on you at this stage, you know? So if there are tools and resources available to you and you're using them, I think that's a sign of intelligence, but it shouldn't be speaking on your behalf. It should be supporting you.
And that's the perfect way to bring this to a close, is that you have a brain, you have intelligence, and this is a way of supporting your intelligence to amplify, to create a competitive advantage, because some people are not using this and they're not going to use it. I want to do a part two of this at some point, because I really feel like I want us to drill down a little bit more and have a simple, like I could see a part two being all about strategy, because what you've done is laid the groundwork now and you've given us some simple ways to begin this. I want to speak to those who are trying to compete, who are on the front lines going, I got to win.
The contractors.
I want to speak to those in a part two. Will you consider that?
Absolutely. Let's go for it.
Awesome. Anything else you want to share as we wrap up this particular conversation?
No, I think, yeah, it's an interesting space that we're in. And like you said, we should not be afraid. We should embrace it as a support function and as a support tool, and understand that prompt engineering is going to be a skill that's going to be expected in the future. So as we prepare for this and we reconfigure our brains for artificial intelligence, open our minds to prompt engineering. Let's understand the frameworks and let's become better prompters by embracing this and not being scared of it, I would say.
Man, you're an absolute rock star. I can see you, like, you know, I feel like you're going to be one of those lifelong students with like two or three PhDs in the future. do you see yourself continuing? Because AI is going to continue, right?
Yeah,
it's the evolution of tech. What do you see in terms of your own future?
I think being a thought leader is important to me, but I think more on an advisory side rather than an academic. I like being in business. So to be so removed from business and be in the academic world will be a little bit difficult for me. I need to be in the space of creating. And creativity is at the heart of it, solving problems. It's not about, you know, making black and mahogany go together, you know. It's actually solving problems. That's the original idea of creativity. So for me to continue to be creative, I have to be in the space of business and in the space of problem solving. And so I think that everything I learn in the academic space will then flow into that thought leadership space, where I can then serve on advisory boards and really be able to help guide especially emerging businesses or, you know, startups to become the best version of themselves, you know.
Well, thank you for helping our listeners solve problems. Zoe Mavi, thank you so much for joining us on the Brandon Brand Show. And for you guys, I want to thank you for sharing these episodes with someone who wants to supercharge their brain. Until next time.